One of the reasons that I'm really excited about Bob Perkowitz tonight is that his background is in market research. So this is someone who's had to succeed in business because of being able to compile and successfully use market research. He's the founder and president of EcoAmerica, a nonprofit that starts with people and uses consumer research and strategic partnerships to create large-scale engagement programs that build individual and institutional leadership for climate and sustainable solutions in America. He also sits on the boards of the Environmental Defense Fund, World Bicycle Relief and Clear Path Foundation, as a past trustee of the Sierra Club Foundation. EcoAmerica's current research includes the American Climate Values 2014 and Communicating on Climate, a guide. Please welcome my friend Barb Perkowitz.
Good evening and welcome to Washington, D.C. Thanks for coming. I have to tell you, I feel a little bit guilty with people coming from so far away. I live four blocks from here. My carbon footprint is zero. But I did get sweaty a little bit on the way over. It is hot out there, and so it's nice to be inside here where it's nice and cool. I got to tell you, Citizens Climate Lobby has no bigger fan than me in a lot of different ways. As Mark said, I've been on the Board of Environmental Defense Fund for the last decade, the biggest champion of a thing called cap and trade. I do think that your solution, fee and dividend, is better for a lot of reasons, which I can't go into. I asked Mark what he wanted to speak about here, and he said the volunteers here are going to visit every single congressional office and Senate office over the next couple of days. I think that is amazing that all of you have gotten together and planned these meetings and done it. That's an accomplishment in and of itself. But he said any help that I could give you on communicating and talking about climate change might be very helpful. He also said, if this works, they may be the most committed and prepared people you have ever spoken to. So, they asked me if I wanted a podium, I said a big one, and I hope I don't say anything wrong, but I think Mark's advice about you taking and leaving what I say to you is best. We do an incredible amount of research. As Mark also said, this is a propitious time here. The Pope came out just a couple days ago amidst the international negotiations, all the domestic politics. The Pope comes out with his encyclical. And not only is it totally into addressing climate change, but it slams cap and trade and says, I think we need to do fee and dividend. So he's completely on your side. I don't think the heart went in since we've got to them, but I think Citizens Climate Lobby did. The other thing that's happening that you might not know about, on Tuesday next week, the Lancet report is coming out. The last one they came out with was 6 years ago. It is the definitive statement on climate health globally, and that will be released on Tuesday. And then also on Tuesday, and I don't know that this is public yet, the White House is doing a national summit on climate and health. So there's a lot of activity, and you guys are right in the middle of it, which is why I think this is such a fantastic week. We are all here because of climate change, and because of that slide before, I don't have to talk about any of this thing, but I do want to say we might have some differing perspectives and priorities on it.
Which is fine, but we all have the same goals, and we all are, I don't know, some of us are kind of desperate, and some of us are kind of more desperate about solving this problem. We do face a very uncertain future. This is the IPCC scenarios, and they call them scenarios because they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know what we're going to do. So they say, here are the categories of the different things that we could do. The red line at the top is business as usual, and you'll see that it leads us to, you know, maybe a 10-degree increase in temperatures Fahrenheit globally, which would leave us with a planet that doesn't look much like it does today. And then at the bottom, there's, you know, sticking below 2 degrees. I have spent the last 4 months trying to, you know, if you take a look at the MIT scientists, they've got all these flow charts, and they say they model everything about the economy, everything about climate change, and they kind of say we're not going toward a very good place. So we're heading for at least 4 degrees centigrade. And then you take a look at the guys over at Stanford, and they're all hopeful. They say, hey, we went from 100% horses in New York in 1900 to 100% cars in 13 years. They banned horses from 100% of, and they think that there's going to be a lot of breakthrough technologies that is going to shift America much more rapidly than you might expect toward climate solutions. I don't know, but I do know that to get to 2 degrees, we are going to have to peak out in the next 15 years or so in emissions globally. Then we're going to have to start reducing. We're going to get up to, right now, around 35 gigatons a year. We're going to get up to a little bit above 40. Then we've got to reduce it radically over the next 40 years. And then we've got to find ways to take carbon out of the atmosphere right now if we're going to stick below 2 degrees. So, we can do it. The question is whether or not we will do it. And there are some fantastically big obstacles that we face. Now, the first thing is that we have this problem that's vague and abstract. You can't see chemistry changes, or the temperature changes you don't notice. The biggest thing is in the upper right and the lower left. If you take a look at the 15 largest corporations in the world, 11 of them are fossil fuel companies. And in 2013, which is the last year I have data for, they had over $3 trillion in revenue. So we think it's a big deal to put $5 billion into a new battery plant. Those $3 billion is not going away, and it's supporting the stuff on the lower left, the politics. There really is only about, there's less than 10% of Americans that aggressively oppose climate solutions. It's probably a number like 6%. But those 6% all seem to be running the Republican Party and being very vocal about it. And the guys on the upper right are funding them. So, and then there's this other thing that there's all kinds of biases, psychological factors that cause us to avoid the issue. And so at EcoAmerica, all these things we look at as, you know, values challenges and communications challenges, and we try to address them with research and programs. The biggest challenge, which is what you all hear, is that climate change, only 3% of Americans say that they talk about it often. 74% of Americans say they talk about it rarely or never, and then that little group of 23% or so in between say they talk about it sometimes. So we're not even talking about it, and at the same time, we know that we can solve the problem. We know that there's huge companies all over the world, Apple, Microsoft, all the tech companies are going climate neutral. Half of the colleges and universities in America are not reducing their emissions by 20% or 30%, but they've signed a pledge to go climate neutral. There's no net impact on the atmosphere or oceans. Colleges and universities like Los Angeles Community College District with 257,000 people has a formal plan to go climate neutral. And then globally, the electricity generation, which is in the lower left, in 2013 we crossed the Rubicon and we're generating more renewable energy for utility scale power globally than we are all fossil fuels, including natural gas and nuclear combined. So, and individual people are standing up and taking action, including all of you. And again, I'm going to thank you probably 4 times, but I want to thank you all for coming here and standing up and taking action. It does make a huge difference. There's the divestment movement is building up storm. This is individual investment. My wife, Lisa Renstrom, is here, and she's plays a big leadership role in this and did with the philanthropy thing. They already have over $3 billion of individual commitments to divest from fossil fuels. The thing's only 2 months old. So as Mark said in his opening comments, you know, we are where people are going, and we just have to guide them and get them to the right place. What we have to do is we have to take climate change and switch it from being a special interest into a public interest. All movements start out as special interests. Like if you talk about gay rights, that's about them, and they might have the right to hold their hand up and be fist up and be angry about things. But when they start talking about family and the right to love who you want to love, and then they get corporations to give same-sex benefits and people around to accept it as, hey, your cousin, your friend, they get it, they make it into a society issue, not a special interest. And too many people right now think of climate change as environmentalists versus the oil companies. It's not about them. It's about us versus the oil companies. We need to get around it. So, and I just mentioned, so what we need to do, we don't cooperate while the environmental groups, we're all going our own ways trying to raise money. We need to cooperate better. We need to engage more institutions. I'll get into this more later, but like if Walmart gives same-sex benefits, it's done. If the military starts doing civil rights and allowing people of any race to participate in any part of the military, that is what enables society to do it. So we need to do that, and we need a new master narrative that is not about polar bears and warming temperature. It has to be about people. So that's what we do at Eco America. We work to build leadership. We work to get leaders to cooperate, and we work to make climate change relevant. And we have done programs. We do large-scale programs, like, the President's Climate Commitment. We've signed up 700 colleges and universities to go climate neutral. It's probably the largest climate neutrality program in the world today. And we also are, right now, we've launched a thing called Momentus, where we're building up programs for faith and health and higher education and business and for local communities. Many people want to do something about climate change. They don't have the resources. They don't have programs designed for them. They have to join a green group, and people don't like to do that. So we're building leaders and programs to support all these sectors. The one thing about the programs that we do is that none of them have our name on them. They don't say Eco America, and they don't say Momentus, because if you're the American Public Health Association, you can't join the Sierra Club, but you can join a coalition of peer health organizations in climate change. So it's always about them. It's never about us. But what Mark asked me to talk about is some of our research. Everything that we do has got a lot of research behind it. We do research into the psychology, into the health aspects, into other campaigns. But the two biggest kinds of research, and what I'm going to talk about a little bit tonight, are values research, and I'm going to talk a little bit about communications research. I'm going to give this whole presentation to Mark, and he can post it, he can email it to you, you can do whatever you want, so you don't have to take any notes. All of the research reports are at the URL up above. Some of them, like, are thick and big with hundreds and hundreds of footnotes, and some of them are small little useful guides, but you can scan through them and take what you want. So just starting out, the way that this thing works, like we do messaging research where we'll do a whole bunch of focus groups, and we just listen to people. We don't feed them ideas. We listen to what they say. Then we take it and arrange it into statements, which we do take to dial tests. We'll do 1,000 people in dial tests. 25 groups of 40, listen to every word that they say, substitute words, change the orders of words, and try to come up with statements that people will buy into. And so our last time that we did it, we said for conservatives, there are two messages that work best on climate change, freedom and family. So when you talk about climate change, if you talk about freedom and family, you will get them to listen. And how do you do that? Well, if it works out well, you find people to pick up on the research, and they name the car that's driving around the NASCAR track last season, Energy Freedom, Your Family, Your Choice. Okay? And then after that, then all of a sudden in March of this year, there's a bill introduced in North Carolina that's called the Energy Freedom Act. Energy independence is a double-edged sword. You can lose a lot on it, you can win some on it, but energy freedom leads to only one thing, and that is you've got a choice to do what you want to do, and there isn't a conservative libertarian person out there that is going to argue with you on that. So this is how the research is supposed to work, find new things. I'm going to talk about values right now. We have the last time we did it, American Climate Values Report, and then there's some baby report that comes out of it that about faith in climate, about race and culture and climate. Don't have time to go through very much of these things. These are usually day-long briefings that we give. So I've just picked five classic findings from these reports and five new findings about where people are on their values related to climate change. So first I'm going to go over five of them are what we call our classic findings, things that we've done this four times over the past 9 years. And there are certain themes that just keep coming up over and over and over again. You should embed these into your brain. And the first one is that Americans follow their tribes. If you take an issue like Obamacare, everybody's for it or against it, but nobody can explain it. You take the stimulus program, you're for it or against it, but nobody can explain it. And so what you do is you go, look around at your family, your church, your business colleagues, wherever you go to school, and then you take a look at what people around you that you like, think, and believe, and you trust those people and the leaders that guide those people. And that's how most people decide on social issues in America. They aren't confident, even leaders, talking about climate change. It's a big problem, but I don't know what it really is or what to do about it. So you have to always think about addressing people in groups as opposed to individuals and getting leaders of tribes. If you want to flip, let's say, your local community, or if you want to go into a congressman's office, if you can walk in with 5 local businessmen and 2 ministers, it's very powerful because you're bringing tribal power to bear. Second thing is people are not ready to abandon the American dream. If you think about it, when you were a little kid, your parents said, hey, get better grades, you'll get into a better school, you'll get better job, you get a better wife, better vacations, better house, better everything. Everybody in America has been taught since they've been tiny that you have to do better and get more. And so our research reveals that a lot of people rebel against the concepts of sustainability and sacrifice. About 35% of Americans get angry when you start using those words. It's all that stuff about Al Gore lives in a big house and flies around airplanes. You know, people slam you with that stuff because they're upset about it because it doesn't fit into their mind scheme. So what you need to do is you need to kind of redefine the American dream for them. You can have better health, you can have better schools, you can have a better home, you can have a more prosperous, successful life, but it's not the sole province of fossil fuels. You can do that with renewable energy too. So I just want to caution you about attacking people, and I don't mean to use the word attacking, but challenging them on something that's a fundamental value that they've had since the beginning of time in their life. Another one of our classic findings is competing priorities. For nobody in America, except maybe a few of us, is climate change number one. You care about your kid, or in my case, my grandkid, a whole lot more, or your wife, or you have immediate other concerns. And if you have to be very respectful of competing priorities amongst Americans, and you need to tie climate change to that. So think about what you care about. Think about what the people you're talking to care about. And when you talk to them, talk about those things and connect them to climate change. Don't make it abstract. The last one in this set, I think, is politics and denial. And as I've said before, we have this phenomenon that 35-36% of Republicans identify, 35% of us identify as Republicans, and 25% of them are still locked in, climate change is not happening. So there's the little nexus of politics and oil money, and those people are, if those people just somehow flip, they're kind of backed into a corner, they don't have a way out, but if we can help them find a way out when you're talking to them, you can get them to accept it. You're starting to see breaks in the dam, like Mark just mentioned, Jay Faison, a well-known conservative kicking in $175 million to help other conservatives. You got Lindsey Graham coming out. We're starting to see some cracks in the dam, but this is a big problem we have to deal with. And then the other thing, you know, there's a lot of people that you think should care about climate change, let's say Warren Buffett or Bill Gates, and they do. It's in the bed, but they're not really worried about it. They're spending billions and billions of dollars stopping malaria. Why would they spend all that money trying to stop malaria as opposed to trying to stop what is the biggest public health threat in the world, climate change? They're not dumb. But they have what we call techno-optimism. A lot of people have variations of this, and they think, you know, we're Americans. We've solved every challenge before us. We'll solve this one. Don't need to worry about it. And so they, you know, when you've got like a guy that can come up with a limo scheduling service and be worth $30 billion 4 years later, or you can just say, hey, this is kind of cool. I'm going to build my own rocket ships, and we're going to go to Mars. You know, you kind of think you can do anything. And so this is a big thing. There's a whole lot of people that should be engaged that aren't. And if you have somebody like that that you think is real smart, you have to tell them, you're right. We can solve this thing. Okay, but we're going to solve it faster and better if we take action and work together. Just don't let them stay in their lethargy about the issue. Try to get them to engage on the issue. So those are the classic findings, and I've just got five things that are from our research last year that are, I think, important insights. Your values don't change very much as you, once you become like by 35, you're kind of locked in. People are more loyal to their political party than they are to their spouse or to their faith. I'm not kidding. Not, you know, depending upon where you look, between 91 and 93% of us, when we pick a political party when we're 35 years old, between 91 and 93% of us will die with that same political party. And if something happens like, oh, let's just say you're Richard Nixon and you've been telling everybody for decades that the Chinese are a bunch of pagans and the Russians are the evil empire, and then all of a sudden you wake up and you say, oh, let's start selling them Pepsi and do some glasnost with them. You know, your mindset changes. You are locked into that political framework. So if we can change the leadership political framework, we can get some action. But so these things, we have a chance to dig into things more deeply. And one thing that we dig into is there's this concept that if you look at the big cross-sector polls like Gallup and Pew, they will tell you that climate change is a low priority for Americans. If you look at the dedicated climate polls, Yale and Stanford, they will tell you that 70 to 80% of Americans care about climate change and they think it's an important issue. And so what's the difference between the 20 to 30% that Gallup and Pew tell us and the 70 to 80% that Yale and Stanford tell us? Well, when we do our polling work on this, it's not the values research, 270 questions, only 70 of them are about climate change. The other 200 about family, faith, jobs, hobby, national security, and the computers can do algorithms and say that the people that care about this part of climate change also care about these things. And we're able to correlate here and say that there's a big gap. There are 50% of people that we call warm believers or cool believers, but they're not doing anything about climate change. They're not activated. There's something around 20% of us that are activated, and they might talk to you about it, but they really are concerned and worried about it. There's a big group that are kind of concerned, but they're not really paying enough attention. So when you know, what we are saying is that saying isn't doing, and what you've got to do is we still have to work on people all across America and move them into a bigger state of reality on climate change. The other thing that our research says is that there's a 93% correlation between thinking that there are benefits and solutions to climate change and actually believing in climate change itself. If you don't think you can solve it, then you don't believe in it. That sounds kind of weird, but it's not just a global thing, it's a personal thing. People have to be personally kind of told and convinced that if we solve from climate change, your town, your family, your state, your country, about you, things will be better around you. So you always got to talk about benefits and solutions. We dug into the tribal thing a little bit more to say what are the factors behind the tribal thing that cause people to group together? And we found out that the number one thing there is an exclusionary principle. That what happens is that people are afraid that if they don't buy into their family, business, whatever social groupings, if they don't buy into that and support that view, that those people will not support them and they will be excluded. So if you're talking to somebody on an individual basis, you can tell them that, hey, you don't have to be an activist. You don't have to go in there. You can ask questions. You can talk. You can say, it's a concern of mine, and plant some seeds in there. You can kind of undermine a little bit more than you can get them to radically shift to change on climate. And then we dug into the thing about the American dream more and said, what is the American dream? What are the people that do that? What else do they care about? And we found that there's a really high correlation about family. And this confirms some other things that we did with the messaging research, that People want a bigger car and a bigger house, but if you tell them that it's because you want to show how wealthy you are, they get offended by that. What they're really trying to show you is that they care about their family and they're good people. So to the extent that you can connect climate change with family values, and you can get people to buy into climate change more. And then this, Chris Van Hollen gets my award for the best use of climate communications ever by a politician. He introduced, I mean, have you ever seen a bill that, you know, puts the word family and climate together? This is, he's got healthy, family, security, climate, all in one bill. And he has got, you can see the top of it at the lower left, he's got infographics that show you what's good for climate change is what's good for the middle class, and what's good for the middle class is good for climate change. So there's some really, and he's reintroduced this bill in the 2015 session. You can use these things. The politicians only listen to things that will help them get elected, and he's clearly found his niche here. The other thing is, Mark has been a management and trainer for a long time, and I'm sure he would tell you that, hey, the best way to win friends and influence people is not to insult them. And what we do is we go out there and we say, 97% of people, all scientists all agree, you must, there's something wrong with you if you don't get it, because every scientific institution, every university, and they might, all those people might agree with climate change and say that it's a big issue, but you might just think that something else like freedom is more important or having a good economy is important. You might not put it on, you might have a whole different value set to look at it. But I do know that when you walk out and you start going up, I used to think it was just the leaders. I thought I was insulting, I don't want to mention any politicians' names here, but I just thought when we were doing that, we were insulting leaders. But even everyday people out there that you talk to them and you come up with an arrogant stance on climate change and you alienate them, this is not the way to get Americans to care about climate change. So there's summary takeaways here. I don't want to go through all these. I just went all through them. And again, you'll get the presentation and you can go get the big reports on the website. But I did want to talk. We do the values research, and then we also do communications research, and we try to say, what are the words and phrases, and how do you use them to convince people? And again, I'm just going to, we've got the mothership version, which five people spent a year working on, Columbia University and us, and then we've got these shorter versions, which is 13 steps for communicating on climate, which are handy little guides. And what they do is they actually show you how to use the stuff. So it's, if it says, sequence matters, it shows you why sequence matters. We know that you can take that same string of things and start with climate change and people dial down and you spend the rest of the 6 or 8 minutes trying to get them to be neutral again. But if you start out with the right things, like connect on personal values, think about them, show that you respect them, they'll dial up and you can keep them up and you can even get all the same points in. It's just a matter of arranging the sequence. So some of these things, when you're preparing to walk into a congressman's office or to talk to anybody about climate change, is you should talk primarily about people. Don't talk about abstract science. Don't talk about polar bears. Start and stay with people throughout. Second thing is connect on common values, and the third thing is acknowledge ambivalence. So I come in here, and the first thing is, as I start talking about you, I talk about how we connect on common values, and I say something to you like, we might have different priorities, or we might have slightly different perspectives, but we all have the same goal. Now, what that does is it leaves space in there, because we might disagree about, let's say, cap and trade versus fee and dividend or something, but I'm letting you know that I'm open-minded about the whole thing, and you have permission to stay in that same space too, and we can talk and we can work upon the issues. So stay with people, connect on common values, and acknowledge ambivalence. The other thing is that when you're talking to people, you start small and scale up. Don't start big and scale down. Sequence matters. I tell people right now to use the word facts and never use the word science, never use the word environment, never use the word polar bear. This is literally advice that I give people. And I've been in a conference speaking to 3,000 scientists, and I've told them to take their computer and do a search and replace. and take away the word science of climate change and talk about the facts of climate change, because at some point in time, it's not known whether or not cigarettes cause cancer, but somewhere it goes from being a theory and disputable into reality. And pretty much everything we know about climate change is the world of facts. When you talk about science, remember that every time you read anything about science, it's refuting some other piece of science. So real Americans understand that science changes, and that they have their scientists and you have your scientists. Even all of us that have been in this issue 5 years ago, we thought that peak oil was it, and 20 years from now, we're gonna run out of stuff anyway, so sooner or later, problem's over. Now, we can poke a hole anywhere in the ground and find something that will burn. It's just how much we have to put in to get out of it. So it makes sense to talk about reality and not about science. People will follow facts, especially things you can see with your own eyes. The last point here is describe, don't label. If you have labeling words like alternative energy, I don't even know what that means. Is that nuclear? Is that fossil? Is that fracking? Is that, you know, what's alternative energy? Or if you say climate change or global warming, you know, those things bring up frames in people's mind that you have to deal with, and most of the time you don't even know what those frames are. So if you say, I want to have clean energy from the wind and the sun that will never run out, and oh, by the way, it's free once you build it, that it's hard to argue with that. But if you say, I want solar power, somebody thinks, Solyndra, we got another Solyndra idiot here, right? So you should always try to describe, not label. And then my last slide of advice, or there might be one more after that, is that with everything that you do when you're talking to them is you want to be positive, solutions-oriented, and you want to inspire and empower them. Usually in my presentations to people that are not as knowledgeable about climate change as you are, I have 6 or 8 slides at the beginning instead of just one that show, look at all these people are doing about climate change, look about this, look at this, look at this, and you can't go through those slides without thinking that countries and businesses and schools and communities all around the world are doing something about climate change, so that it's something that we can do. We just have to decide that we want to do it. And your job is to inspire and empower people to do that. Oops, I was going to leave this one out because I thought I had too many slides. But one thing that happens is that when you talk to people, if you give them 7 facts, they don't remember any of them. But if you give them a real powerful fact from a trusted messenger, somebody that's irrefutable, they will remember that, and that'll be part of their mindset forever. So don't go out there and show them how smart you are with 17 facts. Talk about 1 or 2 things that would really stick home, hopefully something that's local to them and relates to whatever they do. And then the last point here is speak from the mountaintops, don't fight in the trenches. If you ever get into somebody and you start talking about 15 years of this or this much CO2 or, you know, whatever it is, the best you can kind of do is come out neutral. But if you stick from a values perspective and you talk about what's really important and stay with what's really important, it's much harder to argue with you. You can find common alignment and you can get them to address climate change. So just in one slide, the whole presentation here, on communications, we used to talk about Armageddon from the mid-90s when it came out as an issue and people started getting agitated about it. It was polar bears and Armageddon, high water levels, all that stuff. When the Obama campaign started, there was some unwritten thing, and all of us kind of woke up the next morning and said, oh, we're going to have jobs, we're going to have health, we're going to have prosperity, and let's not talk about the bad things. And we did that. Those are valid arguments, but you should mostly assume those and focus more on the benefits. But what we're really trying to do is make climate change personally relevant to everybody in America. And so what we need to do is, you know, be very salient about it, be really local, be unambiguously confident that we can solve it and that there'll be huge benefits, give them things that to do that empower them, and then talk about it from a moral or values perspective, not from a technical perspective. So this is what we have, what we call a path to positive. We're trying to get everybody on a path to a positive energy future. We want them to lead by example, engage stakeholders, and do collective action, work together, things that you are all doing, and I thank you again for doing that. And so now I think we're going to do a little bit of Q&A. I think there's probably 2 microphones out
there's
here.
There's mics on the 2, not the middle aisle, but the 2 other aisles, and if people can line up behind those mics, they could get in line for questions.
So if you have any questions or any comments, this is your time. If you've got an idea on this, even if it has nothing to do with my comments here, feel free to stand up and say, hey, I think we should also do that too. But I'd ask you to keep the comments to maybe a minute or so that we can get more than one person up here talking if you want. And then I do want to say, that's my new granddaughter, okay? Now, that little person has blown me away in a lot of different ways, but in terms of climate change, for all my life, for the last 20 years, people have been saying, I care about it because of my kid, I care about my grandkid, whatever it is. I've said, stand in line. I mean, we're all gonna die. That's what. But when they first handed me that little baby, I said, this climate change thing is so unfair. How can we leave a screwed up planet to such an innocent, happy, loving, trusting little person, and there's millions of people like that. So you all have your Ellies, and let's make this world a better place for them. Thank you. Okay. We'll go right, left, and again, keep it to a minute, but if you could tell us your name and where you're from first, that would be fun. But now you're doing the label, don't describe, okay? And then my guess is a third of the people in the room aren't really quite clear on what we're talking about. So why don't you describe what the precautionary principle is?
The precautionary principle is basically better safe than sorry.
Yeah. There's the wager arguments, there's the legacy heritage argument, there's a lot of those arguments, there's almost good arguments to make. They don't offend people, and they add value to what you're saying.
Greg Hamra, hello, is this thing working? Testes. Greg Hamra from the Ground Zero chapter, Miami. I loved your message. I'm all about communication. My major was speech communications and broadcasting. And sequencing is so important, and word choice is very important, as we just established. Was it intentional on your part? And now I'm starting to think that it was. First, I thought you were making a mistake. Instead of saying, what did you mean when you said, four times, I counted. Instead of carbon neutral, you said climate neutral. Was that intentional?
Yeah, I never do use the word carbon. Most people don't relate to that. I always say climate neutral.
Okay.
Now, again, no argument works with everybody. And we have done a bunch of research. Like, if you take a look at articles on climate in mainstream publications like Parade Magazine or Reader's Digest, they don't talk about carbon at all because they know that most Americans don't understand what it is, why it's good, or why it's bad. So if you introduce terms that people don't know, most people don't even quite understand what climate is, but I deliberately do try to avoid the word carbon when I'm talking to general
audiences. Very interesting. Thank you very much.
Sure.
My name is Mark Welsh. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. And earlier today, we were told that we should find more endorsers of our systems or our efforts here. To go out and find city councils, mayors, other elected officials, businesses, et cetera. And it seems like you've got a list of 700 colleges that we should contact because you said that you have 700 colleges signed up to go climate neutral. Could we get that list of those 700?
Absolutely. Everything we do is completely transparent. If you go to acupcc.com or just go to our website, you will see they sign up to measure and report their emissions within 1 year. Within 2 years, they have to have a plan to go climate neutral. There are 7 specific actions they have to take, and they have to report on all of that every year. Every one of those plans is online. You can get 80, 90-page plans on how New York University Stern School of Business is going climate neutral, but yes, it's all there.
Okay, one quick follow-up. Would you help us get those signed up?
Would I help you do what?
Help get them signed up with Citizens Climate Lobby.
Well, okay, so...
you know them already.
This is the biggest challenge in working with institutions, is the leader of the institute. People have to make a personal commitment. You know, like when we go up to, let's say, the head of the Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities, who has signed up to participate in our program. And so but he has to make a personal commitment, then his organization makes a commitment, then you can get it to extend to the sector and you can extend to society. People don't go from not really understanding climate change to Keystone XL or fracking in one leap. So each of those schools, some of them are really into it and will come up. But then you're into the policy world, and it's very difficult for people outside of this room to be able to explain why fee and dividend is such a virtuous cycle that will lead to ongoing improvements in climate and the environment forever, and it will help society by benefiting, by having a more equitable distribution of wealth and yada, yada, yada. It's hard to explain to a lot of them. So most of them will not come out with aggressive policy stances. They would come out. Your number one mission is climate change. And at the end of the day, people are going to, it's really about who gets the money. Okay? So I think that there's going to be a lot of people that want to solve it, but some of them are going to be Republicans, and they're going to say, it has to go to a corporate thing because that's going to boost the economy by making America more competitive. Some of them are going to say, I want to have cap and trade because it's a market-based mechanism, and you get rewarded and most efficient and other stuff. And then I don't know. I think it'd be pretty hard to convince most of them to take a policy stance, but I think you'd get almost all of them to say that, hey, I really care about climate change, and that's one of the workable solutions.
Thank you. Mark, wonderful, empowering presentation. Thank you. There's one slide my wife and I are puzzled about, which shows, I think you said crossing the Rubicon, and I couldn't read it, but it looked like you were saying in 2013 we'll have more generation from renewables than from fossil fuels. Is that?
That's new capacity additions, not the total fleet.
I didn't think we were there yet. Can you fix that slide next time? That would be really good. Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't explain that well enough to you, but there's Bloomberg New Energy Finance is the best source for information on renewable energy in America.
Lewis Merlin, Ann Arbor, Michigan.
By the way, I can't see you guys. I got these bright lights in my face, so if I'm one, go ahead.
My name's Lewis Merlin from Ann Arbor, Michigan. I just want to understand one slide, or maybe it was two slides. You talked about the importance of family and freedom, and then you showed the car that was a freedom energy car. I couldn't get my head around how that had anything to do with climate change. So if you could explain that, that'd be wonderful.
Well, right now there's a bunch of utilities in America that are doing everything that they can to stop people from getting renewable energy. And as I think probably a lot of you know, the Tea Party in Georgia and Florida is partnering with the Sierra Club to try to give, and there's people like Barry Goldwater Jr. out there. There's a lot of people. The utilities are trying to put feed-in tariffs to do anything that they can to stop solar power from being added to the grid because it's very disruptive of their business model. So they're buying off politicians and everything. So the energy freedom thing is a dig at utilities. We want American energy, but we want to have freedom of choice. It's a dig at that. And it's basically about you and your family having a choice. So if you buy into energy freedom, you buy into, hey, I should be able to get solar in my house, and you should not be able to stop me.
Time for one more.
Okay, one more. Sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
I'm Henry Slack from Atlanta. I'm curious if you have any suggestions for how EPA could improve its clean power plan messaging.
We got one more from high school.
The EPA does not have a marketing arm. They don't have any communications things. They have a Department of Public Affairs, and they're kind of forced not to message things in politically in ways that would build. They're required to do facts and figures. So yes, we could tell them a lot of different ways to manage it better. They are talking about the right things, about the health benefits and everything else like that. But there would be ways of doing it, but they can't do it even. If we told them to tie it to family or faith or something like that, they wouldn't be able to do it anyway. Okay, the high school guy, and then we're giving it back to Mark.
Hi, thank you. So
as a teenager, I'm really interested in the internet. And I was wondering, it's a really, really powerful tool for spreading messages across the world and the country and to all different demographics. So I was wondering if you did any research on how the internet is changing and affecting this this attempt at communication that we're all a part of.
Well, you know, used to be, before you were born, there were like 5 television stations and 3 newspapers in every community in America. And then all of a sudden we broke out with cable and we fragmented into dozens and hundreds of different channels and information things. And now we've broken out the internet. And you cannot find any topic that you want to talk about where you can't find some websites that support your opinion. So the ability of there to be 40 or 50 radical right things that support climate change or climate change deniers has been a big problem. But you know, there's right now less than 30% of us get news from television or newsprint. All of them are getting it from the internet, and everything that we do has to be a strong internet stuff. So we don't do research on the internet per se, but you know, everything that we have all has internet communities. We blog every day on everything. That's the only way to get out to people right now, really, is through the internet. And if you've got any great ideas you want to share with us, we'd love to listen to them.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Mark.